Everyone, you're listening to WHRW 90.5 FM Binghamton Radio. Just want to remind everyone, this program may contain language or material that may be considered offensive. The views expressed are those of the engineer and their guests and may not reflect the views of WHRW station members or the management. Therefore, we advise you to carefully consider whether you or your children should listen. Just want to remind everyone, if you've been sexually active lately, you're going to want to go get yourself tested for any sexually transmitted infections that you may have had. And remember to do the responsible thing and tell your partner and any partners you've had recently about those issues, if any issues come up, and that's awesome. Also want to let everyone know about a free show that's taking place right here on Binghamton University in the Fine Arts Building in Studio B, 7 p.m. on Halloween night, Bitten. It's a hybrid theater. It's hybrid theater. We got circus acts, fire, blood, ballet, Asian, Korean drum orchestrations. It's going to be a real, real kick-butt show. And so is this one that's coming up right now. And this is Atheists at the Table, which goes on the air every Wednesday from 5:30 to 6:30. And I am your host, Edwin, the Evangelical Atheist. And sitting here to my left is...
I'm Justin. I'm not an Evangelical Atheist, but, you know... I don't believe.
That's good. All right, and then I got sitting across from me, you go first?
I'm Paul. I'm an agnostic atheist.
Agnostic atheist and returning this week.
Hey, I'm Mike. I'm somewhere between agnostic and atheist. I suppose you could say agnostic atheist.
All right, and?
And I am Zach Corner, and I'm a strong atheist.
Awesome. Okay, I'm a strong atheist as well. I believe the term nowadays is anti-theist. I directly oppose the idea that there is a God. I actively believe that there is no God. All right, so the first thing we do here is we're going to look at a couple of news items that have come up in the past week. First thing, hospice chaplains take up bedside counseling. This is all from the New York Times, and this is an article written by Paul Vitello. And it reads... Some of the hospice patients talk about their impending deaths, or about God. Most just talk about what people always talk about. Unfinished business and unanswered questions, regrets over firing an employee 50 years ago. Listening to final inquiries like this has long been the domain of family priests or rabbis. For a growing number of Americans who do not know a member of the clergy, that bedside auditor is increasingly likely to be an emerging professional class known in the hospice world as a pastoral counselor or chaplain, who may or may not be a clergy member. The encounter with a chaplain can be profound and spiritual, and sometimes religious in a traditional way. More and more, though, ministering to the terminally ill in hospice care is likely to be non-sectarian or even secular. The article goes on to say that in the quarter century since Medicare and some private insurers began picking up the bill for hospice care, it has become a common resource for the terminally ill. Spiritual counseling has always been an optional part of the service, but recently the proportion of patients choosing to receive it and the number of new chaplains entering the field to meet the need has risen sharply. And it's just, it's really nice to see that, that right now that they're moving towards, a secular point of view, you know, in things, like in hospitals, in the bedside, and I guess in a lot of really like life and death situations, like in the military, atheists and secularists really aren't given, a place or someone to listen to them or to give them the kind of companionship that they need. And I think it's just kind of, really fortunate that that's what's going on. Any thoughts from anyone else? Anything?
Yeah, it's great. Thank God. You know, it's a good thing that has happened. It should not be a right for only the religious. And even if there are slight religious implications, there's no problem. It's good that the dying of somebody to talk to, and it's relief in their last moments. Two thumbs up.
Awesome. All right, next article we have is something called Fly Me to the Deity. Is another, every week I seem to have another article, some like cultural article from India. It's very interesting. This one is by Tunku Varadarajan. An unmanned spacecraft from India, that most worldly and yet otherworldly of nations, is on its way to the moon. For the first time since man and his rockets began trespassing on outer space, a vessel has gone up from a country whose people actually regard the moon as a god. The Chandrayaan, or mooncraft, is the closest India has got to the moon since the epic Hindu sage, Narada, tried to reach it on a ladder of considerable, but insufficient, length. As my grandmother's bedtime versions of events would have it. So, think of this as a modern Indian pilgrimage to the moon. As it happens, a week before the launching, millions of Hindu women embarked on a customary day-long fast, broken at night by the first sighting of the moon's reflection in a bowl of oil. This fast is done to ensure a husband's welfare. But reverence for the moon is not confined to traditional Indian housewives. The website of the Indian Space Research Organization, the body that launched the Chandrayaan, includes a verse from the Rig Veda, a sacred Hindu text that dates back some 4,000 years. O moon, we should be able to know you through our intellect. You enlighten us through the right path. And I cut it there. The article's a little bit longer. Most of these articles, I cut out pretty much everything, a lot of it. If you want to see more about it, the New York Times is available to you. And they have an excellent topic section at the very top bar. You can find something, View Topics, and just go to religion, and it has all these things right there. I just thought this is a really nice article. It's kind of interesting that they're going to visit their god.
Well,
it's kind of cool.
Their god exists.
Yeah, I guess that isn't... that. Yeah, exists in some odd way. I'm sure they think a little bit more of it, though, than we do.
I'm not sure exactly how much to learn from it, though. I mean, once they get there and realize that it's really just dust and rocks up there, I'm not sure what they'll make of it.
Yeah. Okay, and now this next one is about recently in California over the summer, they had an amendment passed that allowed same-sex marriages. And if you've been keeping up on the news, all the Christian right and all the churches and everything have kind of gotten their panties in a twist, and they're pushing for something known as Proposition 8. So this article is called A Line in the Sand for Same-Sex Marriage Foes by Lori Goodstein. While the battle over same-sex marriage has been all but invisible in the presidential race this year, it is raging like a wind-whipped wildfire in California. Conservative religious leaders from across the country are pouring time, talent, and millions of dollars into the state in support of Proposition 8, which would ban same-sex marriage. They are hoping to reverse a California Supreme Court ruling in May that gave same-sex couples permission to marry, resulting in thousands of exultant same-sex weddings. Excuse me, I thought it was an amendment. It was a Supreme Court ruling. Similar marriage amendments are on the ballot next month in Arizona and Florida, but religious conservatives have cast the campaign in California as the decisive last stand, warning in stunning apocalyptic terms of dire consequence to the entire nation if Proposition 8 does not pass. California, they say, sets cultural trends for the rest of the country and even the world. As same-sex marriage is allowed to become entrenched there, they warn there will be no going back. The vote on whether we should stop the gay marriage juggernaut in California is Armageddon, said Charles W. Colson, the founder of Prison Fellowship Ministries and an eminent evangelical voice, speaking to pastors in a video promoting Proposition 8. We lose this, we're gonna lose in a lot of other ways, including freedom of religion. Tony Perkins, president of the Family Research Council, a conservative Christian lobby based in Washington, said in an interview, It's more important than the presidential election. We've picked bad presidents before, and we've survived as a nation, said Mr. Perkins, who has made 2 trips to California in the last 6 weeks, but we will not survive if we lose the institution of marriage. Accents are mine.
Thanks.
I thought they were written.
No, actually. Yeah, my attempt at characterizing them as a bunch of idiotic yokels. Here's a good example of how the religious are able to do harm in America, and I guess across the world. You know, you've got people who are basing their positions off of a religious text and off of their religious beliefs and their religious indoctrination, and it's resulting in their attempts, which may prove to be successful in the future, to remove the rights of a minority, and I think that's just incredibly unfortunate. And they're also incredibly idiotic on the whole situation. The idea that you'll lose freedom of religion from same-sex marriage. I've read all their arguments, and they're pretty idiotic. Basically, the thing is that, you know, eventually the state will force the churches to marry gay people together, and, you know, or the things will happen in hospitals, and the doctors won't feel it's right, and then the government will make them, you know, the doctors go against their religious wishes. There's a whole bunch of really absurd things going that go through these people's heads. Any comments?
Right, it's funny, about 40 years ago you could read that same article and replace gay with black, and then, you know, you'd basically be the same thing. And anyway, two things on this. First of all, if you're gay and you're California, you're safe. There's no chance of this passing. These evangelicals it's not the popular position at all. They're just loud. And I'm glad that it's being carried out the right way through the state system and through the court, because I personally don't believe, just an aside, that gay marriage is a federal issue. It's a state issue.
Anyone else?
I think marriage should, since it's all, you can have religious marriage and also state-sanctioned marriage, and the state-sanctioned you can't touch, because that's just taking away rights.
Right.
Yeah, it's kind of the same issue when the Catholics started allowing divorced people to start remarrying. It didn't really affect their political standing or their religious freedom or anything like that. It was just a decision within the church. It didn't occur at all in terms of, you know, laws or anything like that. Also, did anyone find it at all odd that one of the opponents was heading up a prison ministry?
Yeah.
Yes.
There's a lot of weird things with the religion in the prisons. But right now we have a caller on the line. Caller, are you there? Yeah, this happened last week. I think I might be pressing the wrong buttons or something. All right, guys, go back to your conversation. I'm trying to figure this out.
Well, we were kind of wrapping up our points. So,
Okay. Caller, if you're listening, just hold on a moment. Trying to figure out exactly what's going on here. Hello, are you there? Hello? No, that is a big N-O. Anything? Absolutely not. All right, I will get back to your phone call in just a moment. Right now, I'm just going to move on to the next article and get you guys going on that.
Skip that one.
Skip this one?
Yeah, that one's kind of old.
Okay, yeah, well, there was an article in New York Times. Apparently, they picked up on this a little bit late about, I'm sure everyone else has seen it now, the Sarah Palin video where she's in the whole spiritual warfare and the demons and the crying out, and just a lot of really, really crazy religious things going on there. I guess the way I want to take the show at the moment is to talk about a little bit of about things that are in relation to the election that's coming up. There's some really unfortunate things that Palin and McCain have been saying, especially. I guess I have a little thing here. Educational background. This doesn't have anything to do with religion or atheism, but I have the complete educational background of Barack Obama, Joseph Biden, John McCain, and Sarah Palin. Educational background. Barack Obama, Columbia University, where he got his bachelor in political science with a specialization in international relations, and then he went to Harvard, where he got his Juris Doctor with a magnum cum laude. Joseph Biden, University of Delaware, bachelor in history and a bachelor in political science. He also went on to Syracuse University College of Law, where he got his Juris Doctor. Now, let's compare this against John McCain, who graduated from the United States Naval Academy, ranked 894 out of 899. That's kind of unfortunate, if you ask me. And Sarah Palin, who spent a semester at Hawaii University, two semesters at North Idaho, two semesters at University of Idaho, one semester at Mantisuka College, and she went back to University of Idaho to finish up and got her journalism degree. And if we're talking about off of a strict educational background, who's got the qualifications, that's pretty clear right there.
Well, in fairness to McCain, I'm not going to be fair to Palin because she's a moron, but in fairness to McCain, you know, you don't really have to be a great book student in order to be a great leader.
This is true, but ranking in the bottom 1% of your class is kind of, doesn't that say something?
Yeah, I guess so.
I mean, we're not even talking, people always say, you know, what do you call the person who graduated last out of medical school? You still call them a doctor, they still went through it, but this is not something that is extraordinarily, you know, time-consuming or extraordinarily difficult to graduate from a naval academy. And to graduate in the bottom 1% of your class, I don't know.
Not too good, nonetheless.
Yeah.
And then they say Obama's too elitist.
Well,
for his education. I've heard those comments. It's pretty sad.
Yeah. I mean, Columbia, Harvard versus the bottom 1% of the Naval Academy and Sarah Palin.
President, you have to be at the top.
Most people.
I don't know about
that.
Naval Academy is a decent school. Still 1%, even in Harvard, is not too great. But yeah, but Obama and Biden certainly have them. No questions asked in the educational.
Oh, of course.
And background.
I don't know. With Palin, there's 4 different universities for 5 different, you know, educational terms. That's ridiculous.
Well, she certainly won't go down as one of the great thinkers of American history. So
she won't go down as one of the great anything in American history.
No.
But she got some traveling done.
No, she will not. Actually, I've got an article here about that. Just first, we had a caller into the station who just wanted to share a little sentiment, and it actually related right back to what we were talking about last week. He was saying, you know, he has two gay stepmothers, and, you know, he loves them dearly, and everyone has the right to do whatever they want, but he thinks it's a bit hypocritical to claim to be a Christian and to be gay and to be comfortable with that, because the Bible outright says it's an abomination. And we did a whole show on this last week, so I won't go into it. I will have the show up as a podcast on iTunes fairly shortly, in about another 2 weeks, and I'll be giving out the information for that when I get that up. It says it in the Bible. It says in the Old Testament. It says in the New Testament. And if you don't know that, then you're not reading your Bible. And to talk about Sarah Palin as a complete ignoramus, here's a little bit of an article from Ferengula. It's a really good. It's a biology blog on scienceblogs.com.
Oh yeah.
Hmm. And he quotes her. Where does a lot of I gotta put on the Sarah Palin accent. I don't know if I can do that.
How do you sound stupid?
You know what? They do it on Saturday Night Live. They do it real well.
I didn't know stupid was an
accent. Just pretend like you're in the movie Fargo.
Just say hockey mom a lot.
Doggone it. I'm a maverick. Where does a lot of that...
No.
I tried. Where does a lot of that earmark money end up anyway? You've heard about some of these pet projects that don't really make a whole lot of sense, and sometimes these dollars go to projects that have little or nothing to do with the public good. Things like fruit fly research in Paris, France. I kid you not. And the man who writes for Frangula goes on to say, I am appalled. This idiot woman, this blind, short-sighted ignoramus, this pretentious clod, mocks basic research and the international research community. You damn well better believe that there is research going on in animal models. What does she expect? That scientists should mutagenize human mothers and chop up baby brains for this work? And countries like France and Germany and England and Canada and China and India and others are all respected participants in these efforts. Yes, scientists work on fruit flies. Some of the most powerful tools in genetics and molecular biology are available in fruit flies, and these are animals that are particularly amenable to experimentation. Molecular genetics has revealed that humans share key molecules, the basic developmental toolkit, with all other animals, thanks to our shared evolutionary heritage, something else the wackaloon from Wasilla denies.
Evolution exists. Get over it.
and that we can use these other organisms to probe the fundamental mechanisms that underlie core processes in the formation of the nervous system, precisely the phenomenon Palin claims are so important. This is where the Republican Party has ended up, supporting an ignorant buffoon who believes in the end times and speaking in tongues, while deriding some of the best and most successful strategies for scientific research in this next election. We've got to choose between the 21st century rationalism and dark age inanity. It ought to be an easy choice.
I find it funny that she talks about earmarks when I believe, reading if the back of the Time magazine a few weeks ago was right, that she in fact requested the most earmarks and had the most earmarks.
Yeah, she did on research on populations, right, fish populations, right, up in Alaska.
That bridge to nowhere, she supported that earmark until it became politically unpopular, and then she jumped on the bandwagon, you know, using it to basically show how bad earmarks are and use this as the poster child. And the funny thing is, she didn't give back a cent of that money. She still took the money, and she just put it down and still used it for other, well, who knows what the bridge to nowhere money was used for.
It's ridiculous. I mean, honestly, going back to the point of, you know, yes, we're studying fruit flies. Okay. I mean, honestly, I don't know. Fruit flies seem ideal for research. They have a relatively small genome that we can map. They have a relatively short generational period between, you know, the parent generation, generation one, generation two. And there's really no harm. They're not being treated poorly, though, for insects. I mean, honestly, we don't know what they find comfortable. I mean, they've got food, they've got shelter, they've got a living space. We don't know what more they want. And it's not like, I feel bad drawing the line, but it's not like we're going over and killing them just for the sake of killing them and seeing how they react. We're seeing how they develop, how they adapt.
And the research that has come from all those fruit flies have helped find cures for genetic diseases of sorts, and possibly Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, a lot of others.
Oh, even more than just those ones that we don't know specifically where. Even the ones we know where the chromosomal or genetic defects, as I'll say, are Down syndrome. There's actually people working on a way using different molecular genetic methods to see if they can eliminate that third 21st chromosome. Mm-hmm. From a fetal pig, actually, is what they're working on.
Well, I mean, it comes to no shock. Certainly, the Republicans have shown time and time again to really have no idea of anything when it comes to science. Mm. And with Bush, this is just another step, you know, past him. So,
obviously,
I agree, especially for Palin. I mean, she's someone who's come out in favor of, you know, intelligent design in schools. I think at one point she said something along the lines of, it was God's will that we build the oil pipeline or something like that. She's really just catering to the religious right in her home state. And
McCain basically wasn't religious enough, and they needed something to balance them out. So they got the biggest wackaloon that they could get to balance out you have an ugly, old, non-religious, yet still a wackaloon. So they balanced it out with a young, pretty religious wackaloon, and that's what we have. I think I got the phone.
Sarah Palin, pretty.
Yeah, she's
prettier than she's, John McCain.
Definitely prettier than John McCain.
I think I got the phone thing figured out. I think we got a caller. Did it work? Caller, are you there? Oh, Christ!
No.
Hey, watch it.
All right, I will get this. I will get this. I don't know what the issue is. All right, here we go. Hold. Press the button. Press the other button. It goes up. Hello, caller, you're there. And nothing. Okay, we okay. All right. I don't know what to do. I'll be back. I'll let you guys keep going on this. Let's go with I'm trying to think. All right. You know what? Let's Justin, pull up the little cartoon. I saw a really great Doonesbury cartoon. It's a plumber comes to a husband and wife's house to fix the tubes. And this is an illustration of how Sarah Palin wants to deal with global warming. Okay? I believe you have the first line.
All right. Does somebody want to come in here and read the third part so that I'm not playing two people?
Oh, for Christ's sake.
I'll be here next.
I will play the third part. Go.
All right. What's going on?
I came home to a flooded kitchen.
Everything's under control, sir.
What's the diagnosis?
Looks like you got a busted shuttlecock.
You mean ball cock shut off?
Well, that may be the fancy term for it.
But isn't a ball cock valve in a toilet?
Well, technically, I suppose, but a leak's a leak.
Wouldn't it help if you turn off the supply lines first?
Well, yeah, some elitist licensed plumber might do it that way, but I'd rather use good old common sense.
You don't know a thing about plumbing, do you?
No, but I agree with you on abortion.
He does, honey. I checked.
This is Sarah Palin's view on climate change. If anyone saw the Charlie Gibson interview, which is up readily available on YouTube, he's walking with her alongside one of the natural gas pipelines, and he asks her, how do you feel about global warming? She says, I think it's probably happening. He says, what do you think is responsible for it? Do you think it's, just part of the natural cycle of the Earth, or do you think humans are partially involved in that? And she says, well, I'm sure humans are somewhat at fault for it, but, I don't think it doesn't matter who's at fault. And I think that there's something incredibly retarded in that. The idea that if you don't know what's causing the problem, how do you fix it? If something hurts in your body and you don't know if it's your ankle or your knee that's broken, how are you going to stop the pain? That sort of thing.
I'm sorry, we're having...
Well, it is a pretty unpopular position on the right to go for global warming. And I was going to bring this up in my own show, in fact. Yeah, instead of the Democrats going on and on about global warming, which does have its merits, fine. Why they don't speak about what's clear and what couldn't even be thrown up, which is how much of the Earth we are using versus how much of the Earth is replenishing itself, and clearly we're using more than it can replenish itself. And I believe that if they were to use that front instead of global warming, which can always be brought up in controversy and say, well, there isn't really global warming, it's just the natural Earth, it's just Earth's way of doing things, it's just a big coincidence, then I believe that would be a much better position that the right could take as well. And I think that's something that's better addressed than global warming, which, although it does have, there is scientific research proving global warming, but there is some scientific research that has come out that has said that global warming may be overblown, or it really just may be the Earth and a big coincidence.
Well, it's interesting that you talk about that, because I have been studying paleontology and paleobiology, and included in that is paleoecology. And as everybody has said, we're coming to the next ice age, or the Earth is going to burn up. The Earth does go through periodic shifts of cold and warm, time periods. Granted, this time, we have a very, very small picture. It is in the average temperature of the planet is increasing a little more sharply than we have seen it in the past, but it's nowhere near out of the realm of possibility. We've seen, at least in the paleo models, we've seen the temperature rise 10 times as sharply in less time. So,
right, which is part of my point, is that you can always come out and deny it, and until the evidence is so forthright and so clear, people who want to deny something will deny it. So instead of going that route for environmental protection, which I don't think will ever have enough support to really bring about that much change in this country, if they instead go down the line that our overusing of the earth, our overfishing, our over deforestation, our using too many of our natural resources, if they went through that, they could get a lot more done that would probably end up helping global warming and that cause anyway.
True.
So that is my point for that one.
Just want to jump in real quick for callers out there, people whose phone calls got dropped and everything. We just got a tech person to come in and got it all officially fixed up. So if you want to call back in, please feel free. We'll get you on the air this time.
We hope.
Yes, exactly. all right, so that's what I want to talk about there. And then we have another little topic that I want to talk about for the second half of the show. And this is talking about... ridiculous medical theories. We're going to talk about homeopathy. We're going to talk about faith healing. We're going to talk about prayer healing. We're going to talk about all those things. First thing, I'm going to read a little thing about homeopathy. It comes from Wikipedia, but it is well cited over there. I promise. And I have Justin, my medical expert, over here to correct anything that may be incorrect. Homeopathy. A form of alternative medicine first defined by Samuel Hahnemann in the 18th century. A central thesis of homeopathy is that an ill person can be treated using a substance that can produce, in a healthy person, symptoms similar to those of the illness. Claims, and you know what, it actually may be easier just to explain this. Basically, let's talk about sleeping pills. Sleeping pills, easiest explanation because everyone knows what a sleeping pill is supposed to do. It's supposed to put you to sleep, and everyone knows what caffeine is supposed to do. It's supposed to keep you awake. And the way this works is they take caffeine, and they put it into a solution. They shake it up to get rid of the bad stuff. And I'm doing air quotes here. The listeners can't see that, but I'm doing air quotes. They get rid of the bad stuff. And then they separate it in half. They cut the solution in half. They shake it up again. They cut it in half. They shake it up again. They cut it in half. And they cut it in half again and again and again and again and again until they have this. Well, they don't just cut it in half. What's the actual term for that, where you cut it in half and then you refill it back to the original amount?
They dilute it.
They dilute it. This is their idea of the power of dilution. The idea that the more dilute something is, the more powerful it is.
That wasn't well,
it's, and exactly. It works it's, oppositely right. than the way it's supposed to. So caffeine, if you've basically, and they dilute these things so that you have maybe one molecule of caffeine in the little solution that you're taking. So you take that solution or you take that pill and you eat that, and that one molecule of caffeine is supposed to help you fall asleep.
That's not exactly what I remember it being. I think it was something along the lines of the water, even if you dilute it, it will retain the...
That is another part of it. And
it will remember
the article. The way the article phrases it is along the lines of if you take... Let's say heavy metal poisoning. Somebody's dying because they've got 1,000 times their thallium uptake. If you take that thallium, mix it in a water solution, shake it up, dilute it 50%, shake it up, and do that 100,000 times, then what they're saying is that water will remember, you know, the water will have absorbed some of the properties of the thallium, and because there's no more thallium actually in there, drinking that water will cure you. Which...
As honestly, either way you're looking at it, either aspect of the homeopathic remedy, it's equally absurd.
Yeah.
And it's also been shown to not work except on the level of a placebo. When non-homeopaths, you know, actual unbiased scientific researchers have actually done studies on it, they've discovered homeopathy does not work. It's as effective as prayer, which... is the next thing I'd like to talk about. Prayer. There have actually been a number of studies done on this, and the answer is back. Everyone wonders, you know, does prayer work? You know, the secularists wonder, does prayer work? And the answer is, drumroll, no, it doesn't work, no. It doesn't, unfortunately. In fact, the people who knew that they were being prayed for...
Did
actually,
worse.
Yeah, they did worse. Which is actually kind of sad. I feel bad that, you know, they died for this experiment. But, you know, science goes on, I guess. I think I just characterized myself as an evil atheist. Damn. Oh, well. But, yeah, that's the thing. The people, the idea is that if your body doesn't think that anything's going to help it except itself, the whole mind over body thing, you're going to, what's the word for the things that fight cancers?
Antibodies
your body's going to
your
work harder.
Immune system.
Your body's going to work harder to get rid of it because it knows that there's no one helping you.
It's basically your fight or flight response, which happens on so many levels of your body that if you're told, if you think and if you feel that, okay, something's going to help me, I don't need to do as much, your body's not going to do as much. But that's just simple logic. And it's been proven, actually, in 7 that I know of, scientific studies that are both double-blind and supported by major universities, that, you know, people who say, okay, if your body doesn't combat this on its own, you know, you will die. They'll have a significantly, and I'm not talking like a 1% or 2% chance of getting better. I'm talking like a 50 to 60% chance of surviving an illness versus the people who are told, okay, we're going to pray for you. God will help you. I mean, I don't know. That just, I feel anybody who says that prayer medicine helps. Okay, we have multiple studies done over dozens of years. I don't even see it as an issue anymore.
That's the joke. And I remember, I don't know, I was reading some website or something, and the person was saying just that, and some Christian person brought up this thing that there was this girl who got rabies, and rabies, once it gets to a certain point, is basically 100%. It is, before that, supposedly 100% fatal. And she had gotten to that point, and you know, they posted her story on the internet, and thousands of people prayed for her, and she got better. So, I mean, they keep using that anecdote, and thank God for science that it uses more than one study, and it uses aggregate variables instead of silly stories
right.
in order to accomplish something.
I do actually know the story you're talking about. It's the girl from Milwaukee.
I don't remember where she was from.
Well, it is actually interesting, and I'm actually working on my master's thesis on this subject, actually, the study of the rabies virus. Her name was Gianna, and we're not going to release her last name because the parents didn't want it, because she's already been the subject of many scientific studies. And what's not totally understood about rabies, or what most people don't understand about it, is that while, yes, it is fatal, it's not that it's impossible to fight. It's just that by the time your body can create the antibodies used to fight off the rabies virus, it's dead. So what, and it attacks your nervous system. And most people don't realize that we do have ways of protecting your nervous system while, you know, keeping you alive through artificial means. What they had done is, this girl, the doctor had put her into a phenobarbital coma, protecting her higher level brain functions, basically protecting, isolating her central nervous system from everything. They kept her alive through artificial means, pumping her blood. I don't know if they gave her dialysis, but they kept her alive through the means of science. They also pumped her full of antiviral proteins such as amantadine and such other ones. I believe they also used some sort of interferons. I believe they were modified interferons, but I'm not entirely certain about
that. So basically,
that.
They pumped her full of a lot of curative things.
Yes. And she survived. And the reason she survived...
Praise God.
No, do not praise God. Praise science. Donate to science. Donate to my research.
No, but it was... Listen... Whatever you do, God is working through you to help you do these things. And it was God working through those interferons that helped the girl get all dialysized, you know?
No, it was the chemical reactions that were guiding it. It's been proven. There's no...
And don't they say that love is a chemical reaction and God is love, therefore it was God. I proved it. God exists.
Which is another good question. Why do Christians even bother with health insurance if they're so sure that prayer will help them out in the end?
Christianity.
Kind of runs along the same lines of why they plan for the future if so many of them believe that the rapture is so near.
Yeah.
Well, then you have the premillennial dispensationalists who belong to a group of Christians who believe that the rapture is so near within the next 50 years that they're like, protect nature. Why the hell for? And Jesus is coming. Let's burn it all down. And that's what you get, premillennial dispensationalists. And it's kind of a really scary sect of Christianity. I have a family member who's a premillennial dispensationalist.
I'm sorry.
Yes, me too. At times.
Maybe this time though. There's always a chance it's maybe this time that they called it. The
no,
last 250
see,
million times they called it. Were
except
all wrong.
For the
this one, this one could be right.
Except for the issue that unless one of his disciples is still alive, wandering around somewhere, it's too late. Jesus didn't make it. Jesus said that you will be here. You will not die until I have had my second coming. That's a paraphrasing, but that's generally what he said. He said to his disciples, except for Judas. When he rose from the dead after the 3 days in the grave, he said, "You'll be here when I get back." And you know, I don't really know how
maybe
you dispute
we missed
that.
It.
There are people who believe that it's happened already.
2012, baby. That's all I'm going to say.
2012.
No, it's the 21st. I think.
I've heard both.
At 6:12 a.m. Partying all night. And then getting blown to smithereens the next morning.
Yeah, actually, I have friends who believe that thing, and they're like, if I'm just with them, then they'll do like some kind of irresponsible thing, and they'll be like, oh, it's okay. We're all going to be dead by 2012 anyway. So. It actually, even something as mundane as that can cause a lot of problems.
But there's a History Channel special on it.
Oh, there's a... Yeah,
there's a History Channel special on Exodus that
there's a history
believes.
There's a History Channel special on the Bible Code, which has said, if you believe in the Bible Code, we can predict any event.
Don't talk about the Bible Code, please. For the love of God, don't talk about the Bible Code.
You can take the Bible Code and search for the name Edwin. And you can find out how he's going to die.
It's actually, if you've got the name Mark or Paul, you can find that real easy.
Yeah.
We've got a caller on the line. Yes, the phones are working. Caller, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, what do you want to talk about?
Hello, I'm Jonas, and I am a very strong atheist. But I would like to briefly discuss... hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Morality issues in the Old Testament and New Testament. And I'd like to bring up a few points. I believe Richard Dawkins talked about how there was a study in Israel about how in the Old Testament there's this genocide, essentially, of these entire peoples. And the students at a Jewish, predominantly Jewish school were asked if they agreed with it. And an overwhelming over 60% agreed with it.
I'm familiar with this
then,
one.
They did the same study, but they took out everything related to Judaism and replaced it with a Chinese emperor and an actual genocide that took place in China a thousand years ago. And over 90% of the kids said that he was wrong in doing it. And I also wanted to discuss if you believe that taking all the nonsense out of the Old and New Testament, like stoning your son if he talks back to you, that there is some morality and that it's a necessary evil, that Druid society has evolved socially to where it is now, and it wouldn't be at all possible without it. Thank you.
Yeah, I would say that even if you take out the genocide and the stoning, you know, gays and children who talk back, if you take that out, you still have mostly have a book of stories and, you know, a few good ideas. You know, out of the Ten Commandments, you have maybe, I believe, I counted it off, I think it's about 3 or 4 useful things. Mm-hmm. Don't murder or kill, depending on your translation.
Of course, George Carlin boiled it down to maybe
two.
Three or two.
He boiled it down to two. Don't kill people, and always be honest and faithful to the provider of thy nookie. Don't do adultery, but then again, I mean, if you're into polyamorous relationships or polygamy, wife swapping, any of that stuff, and both partners are okay with it, you know what? I don't think that's up to God to decide. If you did that, floats your boat,
and
do it.
A lot of these ideas were around before. I remember
they were around before.
I mean, and these ideas were also the evolution of ideas is also something that Richard Dawkins refers to. I think it may be in the Selfish Gene, memes he calls
memes.
Them.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah, and these
memes,
ideas,
memes have become its own meme.
Right. And these ideas have been evolved through other cultures that really were completely isolated from the Judeo-Christian Muslim culture, like the Far East. And although it isn't really exhibited out there today in terms of, you know, the Christian morality, the values of family and things like that that I think Jonas was talking about are exhibited in these cultures.
And if when you're reading the stories, you also find a lot of unfortunate bits of immorality that are just story. They're not part of the commands from God. You've got Lot, who is essentially raped by his daughters, not condemned by God. You've got Jacob, who steals his brother, I believe it, his brother Esau, am I right? He basically, he steals his brother's parental right for land and the blessing from the father. He steals that. No condemnation. Joseph gives birth to 12 sons who create the 12 tribes of Israel. I'd say he's a pretty important man. You know, there's a lot of really unfortunate, immoral pieces in the story. And the moral parts, what are they? Don't steal. Don't kill people. Don't lie. But even that, sometimes you need to lie. Sometimes it is a good thing to lie. And if you're going to paint it, actually, in pretty much any of those situations, it's not a black and white. And I don't think that you can paint stealing, lying, or killing black and white. Sometimes you have to do it. And sometimes it's not necessarily maybe a bad thing, but it may not be the worst thing possible. You may not have a choice.
Right. And I mean, there's so much bad in the Bible, and there's so much nonsense, like rules of how to beat your slaves and things like that.
Jesus supported, and he gave a couple of other rules. I don't remember what the rules are, but I know that he gave a few more rules and guidelines on how to deal with your slaves. So
something like servant, obey your master. So, in fact, it's kind of interesting because in the South during the time of slavery, that's what was often quoted in order to justify, you know, the slavery that was going on there.
And things have come full circle with gay marriage. But I, like I was saying, to say that the Bible is moral bits in it after you take out all the garbage is like saying, well, you know, a serial killer is still a good person. Of course, they've done a few nice things in their life. But by and large, a serial killer is a killer and a piece of crap. And, well, you can't say that they respect their family after that. And his first point was brought up, the whole thing with Jewish kids was, God is not great. Christopher Hitchens covered the problems with even this secular belief and what's called moderate belief, and that it still breeds this irrationalism that's just not healthy.
What does exactly?
Basically, moderates. In the start of the chapter, he goes over. In the beginning of the book, he goes over why he's doing it. And, you know, he puts like a hypothetical person asking him, well, I see that you have all this anger against radicals, but what about just good old grandma going to church? What about just a couple people who are moderate, not radical? And he went on to say that basically these moderates are no better, and that it's still the same irrationality behind radicals and behind the violence that has created.
I've been trying to find, like every week on the radio show, because people ask me about my issue with moderates, because I have an issue with religion overall, and that doesn't mean that I would, you know, if I had the power, I would pass legislation against religion, because I think that would be A, useless, because it wouldn't work, and B, I don't think anyone has a right to do that. But I do think that religion is harmful, including the moderates. I'm trying to figure out exactly how to phrase it. Another thing is, Sam Harris, in his book, The End of Faith, wrote a good piece on moderates and the idea, the concentric circles of moderates down to your really radical fundamentalists. And the moderates basically protect the people who are a little more fundamentalist than them. Because, well, if we start attacking the fundamentalists, you know, and their beliefs, you know, well, how can we do that? They're just practicing faith, you know, really, really strongly. You know, if we attack them, then maybe we have to, you know, people will start attacking us. And everyone protects the moderate people protect the more fundamentalist people inside of them, and those fundamentalists protect the really radical people inside until you get to people who are blowing up buildings. You know, you got people in, what was it, the streets of New Jersey, who weren't blowing up buildings, but they were out in the streets cheering when the World Trade Center came down. So they supported the people who killed themselves for their religion, but they weren't out there. So they were just a little less radical, you know. And then it works out from there. And as for, he asked, do you think that, I believe his question was, do you think that morality can be developed without religion on our own? That was his question, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's been proven. Do we have anyone here who's raised an atheist or was raised without religion? Everyone was
raised? More or less.
More or less. Would you consider yourself a moral person?
Yes.
Okay.
But obviously not as black and white as...
Nothing is black and white. Nothing can be black and white.
I mean, I consider a lot of issues not so easy to pick out like the answer, because like if it says do not kill, then I can't eat anything ever, because pretty much everything that you can eat has lived.
Yeah, actually, oh, hypocrite, even the pathetically fatuous vegan must kill to survive. Suddenly, if it doesn't leak red, then it's okay. It's a line from a play. I wrote it.
I like it.
and it's the idea that, what are you saying? Just because it doesn't have blood in it, you know, suddenly it's, you know, you have pescatarians who eat fish. Suddenly they're not sentient enough to avoid dying. They've got brains somewhere in there.
I'd just like to point out, you were going to go on and say, if it doesn't have blood, it's okay to kill. Well, a human fetus doesn't have blood for the first, I believe, 12 to 14 days that it exists. Does that mean it's okay to kill?
Well, I'm a supporter of fourth trimester abortions, as we've discussed on the show before.
Abortion kills. That's the point.
Forget the whole partial birth abortion. I say up to 3 months you can return it. Just like Macy's. But yeah, there's been a lot of talk about this. I listen to a lot of atheist talk shows, and I listen to a couple of religious ones, and there's a lot of talk of where do morals come from if you don't have religion, and it comes from
evolution,
and a mindset that is built up kind of instinctually, but there's also just observation. If I start stealing something from someone else, well, then, you know, we don't have that trust bond where they'll probably come and steal my things.
Mm-hmm. The golden rule, but then, implied instead of spoken.
But then again, you have Aboriginal cultures and Native American cultures where that's not included, you know, once a month. Mm-hmm. to show their power, they conduct a mini war, and they go and they steal things and they attack, and then they go back. They do it every once in a while just to make sure everyone knows their place. And that's an acceptable part, and it's a moral part of their culture. Morality, is subjective on some level, depending on where you... The culture, that's the word I'm looking for. Mm-hmm. You know, ancient Mayan religion, they would sacrifice a woman in blood. But the woman wasn't... From what we understand, anyway, the woman wasn't terrified to go. Instead, she had been brought up her whole life to believe this was her purpose, and this was a great thing. She was being sacrificed. She was important, and when they killed her, it was a wonderful, beautiful thing.
And something I believe I actually learned about that this year in reference to the Aztecs as opposed to the Mayans, where this person would be selected and kind of almost revered as a god, and then they would voluntarily go off to be sacrificed, and it would be considered like one of the greatest honors in their society. So it really does show that there are far different standards. As I said before, a lot of it is really conditioning. A lot of it is how you're brought up and which values not only are presented to you, but also which ones you choose to adopt voluntarily.
And let's not forget also about the golden rule itself, just to go back to that. You know, Christians want to tout it as this amazing, beautiful thing that Jesus came up with. No, he didn't. Buddha came up with something very similar and actually more effective than the idea of do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And it is do not do unto others as you would not have them do unto you. Except Buddha probably said it in, like, Indian or something. And that's actually a little more effective.
More negative.
More negative?
Do unto others kind of sort of promotes community sharing
nicer.
And stuff. In a sense, but...
But it's not as effective. If you are an outgoing person, mm-hmm. and you treat a shy person the way you want to be treated, you're actually doing that person a disservice and you're hurting them. However, most people are generally opposed to similar things. You know, again, if you're a masochist and you do unto others as you would have them do unto you, you're gonna have some problems. But if
the other person will have some problems, you're just gonna get beat up and you're gonna love it.
That's true. The other way, most people are pretty much hardwired to dislike similar things. Mm-hmm. So don't do unto others as you would not. So don't steal from people if you don't want people stealing from you. Don't kill people if you don't want people killing you. You know, it may not be as positive or pretty, but I think it's a little more effective. Not to say that the other one isn't effective in some places. We also just got an email into the radio station to remind everyone, I should have mentioned this earlier, you can email us at atheisttable@gmail.com. And this person says that morals are taught by teachers and family. Great, that's true. Morals can be taught by teachers and family and everything. I guess the question goes back to evolution when we say, you know, well, where did the teachers and family learn it from, and et cetera, et cetera, back down the line.
Well, as another point I would like to bring up is Christians also extrapolate this to our government, and they claim that it was our founding fathers that had these Christian ideals that created the wonderful Constitution that we had. And I honestly believe that this is one of their last arguments, their last vestige, as they see their religion basically going out of the window, and a more secular society being brought on. And this is them saying, well, you know, without us, we couldn't get here, which isn't even true, and I won't even get into that. But it's sort of a way for them to say that even though we're losing people, even though we're losing support from radicals to moderates to barely there, we still were the ones who created this society, and we are, if not for us, if not for our greatness, we wouldn't have even been here today.
Yeah, it does show at least a little bit of desperation in that it attempts, instead of just imparting morality, there is kind of a difference between just supporting moral behavior, as a lot of the founding fathers did, and just, you know, outright legislating it, which is something that historically doesn't tend to work. I mean, look at Prohibition, for example. I mean, so many years, so much money, and didn't really do anything. And it really shows that it's kind of down to the last straw in a lot of respects.
Yeah. All right. Well, we've only got a minute left, and WHRW News is going to be coming on next. All right. So I just want to thank everyone for listening, and we will be on next week. Again, this is Atheist at the Table. And we will be on 5:30 to 6:30 p.m. every Wednesday. If you want to send a message any other time, I can communicate with you via my Gmail account, which is atheisttable@gmail.com. And just remember, the E comes before the I in atheist. You got one thing to say?
Yeah, I just want to have a shameless plug for my own show.
Oh, go right ahead.
All right, Tuesdays, 4 to 4:30. Maybe not this Tuesday, but next Tuesday, Zach Corner, No Shtick Politics. I'm the host. I'd like everybody to listen. People have told me it's a good show. I hope you enjoy. Tuesdays, 4 p.m. to 4:30 p.m. Thank you, Edwin, for having me on the show. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for being on. And we're just going to close out with a song we came in with. And this is Metallica's The God That Failed from their Black Album. Enjoy.